From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of September 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company will be here to look at the cash grain market, and we'll hear about the weather forecast from Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. Along the way today, we'll take a look at the RINs market with Scott Irwin, ag economist at the U of I, and Daryl Good will be here to talk about next week's U.S. crop production report. He has some estimates on national yield and total production for the coming year. By the way, he thinks about 10.2 billion bushels. More from Daryl Good as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, for this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat was up 12 and three-quarters of a cent. It settled with price at $8.84 and three-quarters in the September contract. July of next year, the harvest month, $8.68 and three-quarters, up 4.5 cents for the day. September corn futures, $7.97, up a quarter. December at $8.01 and a quarter. These are closes and not settlements, up 2 3/4 in the March, $8.02 and a half, up a penny. May corn at $7.97 at a quarter unchanged. July at $7.89, 4.5 higher. And September futures, down a penny and a quarter for next year at $6.94 and a half on the day. And then December futures, $6.59 and a half, down a penny for the afternoon. September soybean futures in Chicago, $17.25, 19.5 cents lower. November at $17.40, down 7. January, $17.32, 13 3/4 lower. In the March at $16.77 3/4, down 13.5 cents. May futures, $15.97 1/4, down 15.5. In July futures, $15.65 1/2 in the bean pit, down 19 3/4. Next year's November, $13.65 1/4, down 13 cents on the day. From the bean meal, $5.32, the lead option, up 20 on the afternoon, and the bean oil at $56.17. That's 61 higher. Live cattle futures finished the December at $129.17 1/2, down 2.5 cents. October feeders at $146.15, a dime lower, and lean hogs finished the December contract at $70.50 per 100 pounds. That was down 40 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon at $96.83 a barrel, up 98 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $3.02 2/10 cents. Ethanol at $2.50 3/10 cents. That's down 3 3/10 cents. And most importantly for us, the spread between the two today. If it's positive, it is. It's good for ethanol being blended into the marketplace. 51 cents is the spread. Natural gas at $2.69 3/10. That's down 8 3/10 cents. And heating oil for the day at $3.15 3/10. For diesel fuel, a penny and a tenth higher on the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,738, finished $34.80 higher in the dollar now at 80.25. That's down 0.79 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Thunderstorms, I probably know that already. 66 degrees outside. The high today was set at 79. The low this evening at 54. Tomorrow, sunny skies, a 73-degree top. And we'll bottom out about 53 degrees tomorrow. And then as we look forward to Sunday, we'll see sunny skies and 75 and 50 on the low. Monday, 79 and sunny skies, 55 degrees in the evening for the low. And then Tuesday, 82 degrees for the high and 59 degrees for the low. We'll have sunny skies, partly cloudy skies by the time we get to Wednesday. 88 degrees for the top and the bottom at 61 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from Jim Angel, Illinois State Water Survey, state climatologist, right here on the Closing Market Report. The other thing to tell you about this afternoon is to make sure you visit our website at willag.org. I think I have told you in the past that you could buy tickets for the September 15th game and the College of Aces tailgate through this afternoon. That's actually been extended through Tuesday of next week, so you've got some time to get to willag.org.
services are made available to
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the phone line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture and commodity trade is Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello, Todd.
How are you today?
Hey, we're doing great. Just got a little dust up of a storm over here. Got some high winds and a couple tree branches down. So not a lot of rain here in Lafayette. Looks like everything's going about south and east of us so far.
Rain is good. Wind is bad. So we'll take the rain, I suppose.
Exactly.
If we could leave the wind aside, the crop we want. What crop is there standing at this point? Speaking of the crop that is there, when you look at the marketplace for the afternoon, were you surprised at all that soybeans were down 19.5 cents?
No, they'd been the leader all week to the downside. The spreads are really working against the beans at this point. The November bean dees corn ratio had gotten up to, I think, 3-month highs last week, and we lost about 2% on that ratio for the week. I think you're probably getting some technical sell signals on the stochastics in that spread. The trade has essentially bought beans and sold corn ever since the August report. And I think this week, as in its totality or as a whole, Todd, we've come into the mindset as a trade that the most likely scenario for any bearish news would be a yield increase in beans and a yield decrease in corn. So I think the technicals and the pre-report jitters probably had the beans on the defensive, and we're going to stay on the defensive all the way into today's close.
Next Wednesday, we will get some numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture at 7:30 a.m. Crop production figures are due out. Will they adjust harvested acres then?
I think they may. I think, you know, what we always talk about between you and I and Dave and I is the total demand minus total supply and what the ending stocks are. I think the USDA, because it's such a historic year, has perfect opportunity to change the parameters and move the harvested acres around. I wonder whether they're going to do too much in the beans at this point because there's not a lot of information, not a lot of boots on the ground information anyway as far as the beans. I guess if I was looking for a harvested acreage change, it would probably be in the corn since it is a September report.
Yeah, most people are in the 10.2 to 10.6 billion bushels, that is, for corn. Where do you stand?
I'm not far from where USDA was last month. I came in at 10.7. I'll tell you what I did. I essentially took a page out of the playbook of September 1988. The bean ending stocks, USDA did not change at all from August to September. And the corn ending stocks, they reduced about a little over 1%. So I came in and managed the supply-demand numbers and the production numbers and the harvested acreage numbers to the point where a little bit over a 2% reduction in carryover is what I'm looking for, and that put me down around the 624 million bushel mark. The Bloomberg estimates were probably the most surprising to me. I had written earlier in the week to clients and subscribers that what would be a number, an ending stocks number, that is, that could get us back to 849 on the December corn, get us back up to near the $18 level, the recent highs in the November beans. And it's interesting because I said 600 million for the corn and 100 million for the beans. And the Bloomberg estimates actually came in with an average of 596 and 106. So I think those numbers are pretty solid. If you would go below 600 million next Wednesday or below 100 million in beans, I think that could open up the door to be able to rally, essentially counter seasonally during harvest, and try and test those old highs again.
Those are really tight supply numbers. We haven't started that tight, I don't think, in a very long time. Maybe not ever. I'm not quite certain about that. But when we start in beans at least at 150 or thereabouts, we tend to use up a bit more than that throughout the coming year, and it continues to shrink. How front-loaded do you think the Chinese buying is this year? There are about 60% of the beans are marketed for the marketing year already, and we're just a few days into this brand new marketing year.
Right. I get the sense that they're probably about 30 to 40 days ahead of schedule, and I also think that if they do get that bullish of a number, they have already made plans to try and work as hard as they can to draw down their own reserves and really kind of tighten the screws down on imports for November, December, and January. One of the things playing in the bean market late yesterday and again early this morning were rumors that China had canceled 2 to 4 cargoes of our beans that were due to be shipped out around the October, early November time period. So I think even when I look at the weekly export sales, you know, we've been running so nicely in the soybean meal. Well, those export sales today were down about 37% from the four-week average. Soybean oil export sales were down about 74% from the four-week average. I think even in the oil seeds at this point, the Asian markets are trying to do their best to not buy hardly anything between now and the Christmas time period. That's the sense I get anyway, and obviously we'll know a lot more once we actually get the USDA numbers and see how the end users react.
Right. So do you suppose that's because the Chinese are of a mind that the U.S. crop is bigger than what was expected because of the rainfall and they're waiting for a lower price, or that they have a bigger crop themselves?
I think they're hopeful that our crop is bigger, and I think they're thinking that by the time we get, if we get South America safely planted, that will take some extra premium out of our markets as well, and that would get them in that January, February time frame when they probably are running low on their own stocks and probably seeing their own domestic prices rise again and force our Chicago prices up again. So I think that's what they're trying to play, is this timing game of getting Brazil safely planted, see if we don't have a little bit extra stocks and draw down on their own grain reserves.
Yeah, given that we're only a few days away until Wednesday, the USDA report, are you of a mind for producers who actually can get in the field, and there will be some of those, but they're probably out of the field at the moment, should sell corn across the scale, or do you just want them to hold and wait?
I don't have a problem with selling if your basis is improved. It's interesting. Today I had two different phone calls. You know, I probably talked to 15 or 20 different guys today, but two different phone calls, one on each side of the Illinois border. The Illinois-Indiana border, the fellow's basis had jumped 18 to 22 cents this week. The other fellow was west of Jacksonville, got off the riverbed, and the Illinois riverbed was dropping about 20 to 25 cents this week. So I think you're at a point now where you probably can't give a very good general recommendation. You're probably going to have to talk to each specific client. Another client north of Lafayette I spoke with, he's actually also a seed dealer, and I asked him, is your early corn going to be better than your later corn? He said, I think so. It depends on when we actually got it planted. So I think here again, if we start to get out of the early corn and get into the later corn and see better or worse yields, that's going to really make my determination on a case-by-case basis.
Do you think that in general that the later corn will be worse than what we've already harvested?
I think that the farmers that I'm talking to right now are more optimistic about their later corn, that maybe they caught a little bit more late rains if they got it in a little bit later. Now, later means, and this is going back to the same conversation, I said, well, what is later? And he said, well, the people that probably planted around May 1st got the best chance for seeing really good potential in their corn because of the later rains. If it was, you know, mid-April or early April, something like that, even if you classify that as later corn, it's probably not going to pick up any of the yield advantage of any late rains.
All right. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Up next, when the size of the corn harvest is small, users of that commodity must find ways to conserve. I'll have a report on how that's begun to happen, but that it's still not clear exactly how much of a cutback will be imposed. Imposed is simply a word, in this case, describing how this season's corn harvest will restrict usage over the coming year. There just isn't enough corn to go around. Better put, there isn't as much as last year, so everybody has to use a little less. They have been, for the most part, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good.
The pace of consumption of U.S. corn has been slowing, as evidenced by small weekly exports and export sales, smaller estimates of ethanol production, declining cattle feedlot placements, and increased slaughter of dairy cows and the hog breeding herd. The extent of rationing required in the current marketing year, however, is still not clear since the size of the crop is still not known.
USDA will update the crop size figures Wednesday. And Darrell Good says the most important figure in the September 12 crop production report will be the national average corn yield, although much weight will be given to the updated harvested acreage number.
The recently released USDA Farm Service Agency report of planted acres of corn in 2012 by those participating in government programs has been used to judge the potential change in the NAS estimate. That report showed planted acres by program participants at 93 million, or 96.5% of the NAS June estimate. The ratio based on the June estimate this year is slightly smaller than that of the final ratio of the previous 5 years, pointing to the potential for a slight reduction in the NAS estimate of planted acres.
The harvested acreage figure is calculated by subtracting acres harvested for silage and abandoned acres from the planted acreage number. That is, abandoned acres and silage acres are not counted as harvested acres.
Acreage harvested for silage has declined over time, averaging about 9.2 million acres in the 70s and about 7.6 million acres in the 80s. That acreage has been relatively stable since 1990, averaging just under 6.1 million acres. Acreage harvested for silage, however, tends to spike in years of dry weather like that of 2012. Compared to the previous year, for example, silage acreage increased by 1.3 million in 1980, 2.3 million in 1988, and just over 1 million in 2002. This spike pattern was not observed in 1983 or 1995, however, when harvested acreage of silage was less than in the previous year.
As for the abandoned acres, Good says that figure increased by 780,000 in the drought year of 1980, 460,000 in 88, 258,000 in 1995, and 1.65 million in 2002. All drought years in the United States. The outlier in this pattern is 1983. That's when the government had a whole farm set-aside program in place in order to reduce the oversupply of corn. Well, this year, Good figures the percentage change in the acres harvested for grain will be something on the order of 1980, 88, 95. That would put the harvested acreage figure right at 86 million. The Illinois Ag Economist is using a smaller national average corn yield and thinks the final crop production number may be about 10.2 billion bushels. If he's right, the year-over-year decline in consumption would need to drop by about 1.8 billion bushels of corn. That's 14%, and not a figure yet realized in the marketplace. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, Washington is clamoring for Congress to do something about the short supply of corn and its potential impact on the price of food. One target is to reduce the mandate for renewable fuels like ethanol in the gasoline supply. I'll have more in a moment, but as you probably already have heard, the ag economists at the U of I really aren't sure reducing the mandate will reduce demand for corn. Much has been made about the impact of ethanol on the price of corn, and more importantly at this time, whether or not reducing the congressionally required mandate to use renewable fuels like corn-based ethanol would be advisable during the drought year. That's not likely, thinks University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin. He looked at the market for RINs to see what reducing the mandate might do to the price of corn and its usage. RIN stands for Renewable Identification Number. Think of it as a coupon of sorts oil companies can give the government instead of actually blending a gallon of ethanol into the gasoline supply. That's not quite right, but it works. Irwin argues the market price of the RIN can be used to calculate how much value it adds to the price of corn. Since one bushel of corn can be processed into about 2.8 gallons of ethanol, the RIN value, which represents 1 gallon of ethanol times 2.8, equals the added value to the price of corn. RINs are worth about 4 to 5 cents, so let's say no more than 14 cents is added to the price of corn. Roughly speaking, it means the RIN, a certificate created by the U.S. government, isn't worth a lot of money, nor is it adding a lot of value to corn. If it were, those RINs would be used. The gallon of ethanol is where the money is for the oil company. Because of this, the mandated use of ethanol does not matter much at the moment. Irwin thinks if the government were to reduce the mandate, the oil companies would still blend ethanol into the gasoline supply as long as it made economic sense. You can read more from Scott Irwin on RINs and ethanol on the FarmDoc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on this Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Harvest stopped there, I suppose.
Stopped today. Rain, so quarter to a half inch and maybe some more coming at us. It was going slow to begin with. I mean, a big difference north of Champaign versus south of Champaign right now.
Tell me about that difference and what you hear and what you think it really means.
Well, I'm hearing harvest progress, 20% up to 75% done the further south out of Champaign you get. In my area, my elevators, I'm running from 1% to 5% of projected done on corn, so just getting slow.
Right. So we just heard Mike Zuzlow talk about what producers have been telling him as it concerns earlier versus later planted corn, and that they thought their earlier planted corn, some of them, might actually be better than their later planted corn. That would be a highly unusual event in most years, but this hasn't been most years. Have you been hearing any concerns that the later planted corn for your producers will not be as good as what they will harvest when they really get started in the early corn?
That is a concern, and I've heard that expressed. Of course, we don't have anything other than field checks so far, because what's been coming in has been the driest and is some of the earliest planted corn, and the field checks are just so variable. And it's showing up when I've got combines running through the field telling me that the monitors are going from, you know, zero to 150 bushel an acre as you go through and ending up with an average maybe around 50. So how do you tell from field checks and get a very good handle on it?
Now, across the 10 or more elevators, I've forgotten how many you operate now, which geographic space is probably the best and which is the worst?
I think the furthest north, the long Illinois 24 or along 24 is probably the best. They cut a few rains that we didn't. The soil is a little deeper and more forgiving to tide them over. Right through the center part, north of Ludlow to Buckley, there's a moraine right in there, so we're not quite as forgiving on some of the soils. And it was drier to begin with, so we're going to have a big range.
And your bids for the day are?
We are at 818 on nearby corn and 1742 on the soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, including Commodity Week. We'll post it to the website by about 6 o'clock this Friday evening.
It's National Coffee Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1620, the Pilgrims set sail from England aboard the Mayflower. Initially, the trip went smoothly, but underway, they were met with strong winds and storms. One of those caused a main beam to crack, and although they were more than halfway to the destination, the possibility of turning back was considered. but using a great iron screw, probably a jack that was used for house construction, brought along by the colonists, they repaired the ship enough to continue on to the New World. In 1892, John Froelich made the first gasoline-powered tractor. It was sent to Langford, South Dakota, which lacked easy access to a wood or coal supply for steam-powered units. His 16-horsepower machine was geared for both forward and reverse motion. It was powered by a Van Dusen vertical single-cylinder gasoline engine mounted on wooden beams upon a Robinson running gear. And in 1899, Carnation began production of evaporated milk. Elbridge Stewart and a fellow business partner founded the Pacific Coast Condensed Milk Company in Kent, Washington. It was based solely on the relatively new process of evaporation. As sales began to grow, Stewart searched for a brand name for his product. While walking in downtown Seattle, he passed a tobacco shop window with cigars on display around a sign proclaiming their name, Carnation. The company was renamed the Carnation Evaporated Milk Company. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, is with us to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Well, most importantly for a lot of the high schoolers and preppers for the evening, they want to know whether they can get their football games played and will stay mostly dry or not. Who gets to have rainfall and who doesn't?
Oh, yeah, you know, that's a good point there about this evening. We've got thunderstorms roaming through Illinois as we speak. In fact, pretty much a lot of parts of Champaign County are have some kind of rainfall right now. There's even a thunderstorm warning, severe thunderstorm warning in the south eastern part of the county. But I think just looking at the radar loops, most of that's going to push through the next hour or so. So there's a few more thunderstorms to the far northwest, but I'm not sure if those are going to make it into our area or not tonight. But we still have a pretty good chance tonight. They still are calling for a 90% chance of thunderstorm. So I think the risk is still there. I guess maybe it's all in the timing, just like the football game last Saturday. It's if we slip them in between these thunderstorms, will be in great shape.
All right. Well, let's try to get those in between the thunderstorms. Now, turn your attention to what next week will bring and whether things will dry out and producers can get back in the field in Illinois and Indiana.
Well, you know, that's the good news is that after we get through tonight's episode, the forecast for this weekend is actually fairly mild with temperatures in the mid-70s during the daytime, lots of sunshine. And that's true all of next week, lots of sunny days. It'll warm up a little bit as we move through the week. It'll be highs in the 80s as we move through the week and lows in the 50s. So good drying weather. And really the next risk for rain is probably next Friday. So we got a long stretch here of nice weather for field conditions.
When you look at the subsoil moisture counters across the state, does it tell you good news?
Yes. After the effects of Isaac and the earlier rains in August, now we got some more here today. The soil moisture from our 19 sites around the state show a pretty good recovery at this point. We got measurements at 4, 8, and 20 inches, and those are all within the normal range right now. So there's probably some areas that are still lagging behind, but I'd say overall the picture looks much brighter in terms of soil moisture than it was a month ago.
Now, once those return to a normal range, does that signal the end of the drought? Is that the signal, or is there something else that we need to watch for?
Well, you know, that's probably for the most part, that's as far as agriculture is concerned, that's probably the primary signal. We will still see some problem areas. Probably the last thing to recover will be those shallow groundwater wells. So we may still hear of farmers hauling water even as we get into fall here. But at least as far as the crops are concerned, the soil moisture is recharged. So that's good news for pasture and as we get into the winter wheat planting season.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking time with us, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is with the Illinois State Water Survey, located right here on campus at the Prairie Research Institute. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org, or you can hear Commodity Week. Our guest this week is Mr. Van Trump. Kevin will be on the phone line about 4:30 this afternoon, and we'll post that up to the website at about 6 o'clock. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.